We are back with the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast. It is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, so we are discussing about that experience in the NBA.
And here to help us dive in is General Manager of the Cleveland Charge, Brenda Yu.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
What's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast. That is the one and only Monica McNutt. I'm Dallin Cuff. Excited about our conversation today. It is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, so we will be joined by the general manager of the Cleveland Charge. That's Cleveland's G League squad, Brendan Yu. An important conversation, an important thing to discuss, because as we've talked about diversity a lot of times, certain groups of people, certain minorities, that's not as top of mind. It doesn't have the same amount of conversation. So this is, I think, a really important thing for him to come on and talk more about his experience.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's certainly something that you and I often have conversations about, right? Like true, sincere diversity, how it can be encompassing, inclusive, and also empowering. So I think to see Brendan in a position like GM for the G League squad of the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Cleveland Charge is a GM squad, just speaks to that actual empowerment, right? Like it's beyond checking a box. And so I'm curious to see how sports has played a role in terms of helping to him navigate conversations around diversity and opportunity that aren't always easy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And obviously, and his role too with the G League team and how that plays with the Cavs, how that organization works together. Because these places aren't all structured the same. So how right. they're, you know, siloed or not, in maybe more this case, I think it's an interesting conversation too to figure it, to really understand his role and the impact he has on the greater organization.
Yeah, and I also hope that we get a little detail of the G League life, because I don't know if people get, like, the G League life is far less glamorous than their NBA big brothers.
Far less glamorous than high Division I basketball. A lot of guys played. Like, the lifestyle you're living, with all the things they got going on college sports, they got their issues. But what's not an issue is the player experience right now is pretty good. You get a lot of private flights, a lot of five-star hotels, tons of gear. You go to the G League, man, you are grinding again. In the NBA, you're grinding, but you're laying on piles of cash and beautiful beds. So it's a little different animal.
I have a friend who, he always says, like, whenever there's a little skirmish, we'll call it, on NBA courts, he's like, nah, them dudes been sleeping on silk sheets way too long. They ain't got it. But if a dude just came from the G League, he still got it.
There ain't no doubt about that. I mean, those guys you're coming with a massive chip on your shoulder. You got you may have 10 days to prove your point and find a way to stay here. And that's lifetime difference. So those guys are grinding. And if you're not ready for that mentally, it's tough. All right, you ready to get to it?
Let's do it.
And now we bring Brendan on. Thank you so much for your time. Great to chat with you. I kind of want to start in a big picture sense. Really, since the spring of 2020 with Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, our country has had a racial awakening, if you will. And a lot of that conversation was around the Black experience. For somebody of your background, how, if at all, have things changed as people have become maybe more aware in the last couple of years of what the differences are in our society?
Yeah, I think, from my end and from some of my experiences, I think people are having more conversations about different things like that. People are doing more research and people are, learning about other people's kind of different backgrounds and, some of the challenges that people may face. And so, like I said, I know that originally it was a little bit more of the, African-American awakening or Black awakening, however you want to put it. But I think, seeing those people's experiences has opened my eyes. And then I think that's also opened the door for some of the other minorities as well to have their experiences shared and made known.
Brendan, how did you navigate? I mean, part of this conversation can just be flat out uncomfortable, right? Like, we don't have it nearly enough, probably. And I don't know that we celebrate one another for all of our differences enough as well. So how did you find that sports kind of helped you navigate that? Because I am of the belief, and correct me if I'm wrong, that within our sports communities, there is an opportunity and there's sort of an instinctual teamwork mindset that allows us to navigate conversations that can be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I think growing up for me, I grew up in a community that there wasn't many Asian people, or people that necessarily looked like me kind of growing up. And, sports was an avenue where, it didn't matter kind of what you look like or the color of your skin or anything like that, like kind of game recognized game in a sense. And you kind of instantly form bonds with your teammates when you're all competing and sharing the same goal or working together on the court, on the field, whatever. And, you know, as a kid, you don't necessarily notice or realize some of those differences. You just realize, hey, this guy's a really good shooter. I should pass him the ball. Or, hey, this guy's a really good defender, or whatever. And he can help us win the game type deal. And so I think that's one way sports, especially in the youth, can kind of, you know, navigate some of those challenges and differences and kind of bridge some of those gaps.
It's interesting you say that, because I mean, I do think back to my experience as a biracial guy in the late 90s playing, whether a high school team or AAU, you did lean into a lot of these things. There were a lot of jokes that clearly aren't going to be said in a public forum from all of us. And I remember there were a couple of Asian players on our team, and you got things were flying everywhere, all over the place. That's probably not appropriate. But what stereotypes did you have to, were there stereotypes you had to battle through that when you're saying it from between teammates in a joking sense is one thing, but society does extrapolate some of that, and that has a negative impact, and we kind of internalize that. Were there things you had to overcome?
You know, nothing really stands out too much for me. I was really fortunate growing up that, you know, both my parents were really supportive of, you know, me participating in sports and playing sports and things like that. And then, you know, just having teammates and people like that, you know, despite our, you know, physical differences or my, you know, different looks, I guess you could say, you know, I don't really remember anything too, you know, crazy or negative in that sense. Like, you know, you grow up with all sorts of stereotypes, maybe in school of, oh, like, he's Asian, he's probably good at math or something like that. But, you know, to me, I don't think anything negatively kind of impacted me too much.
All right, Brendan, so we fast forward now from youth basketball and, you know, tremendously supportive parents as a kid. You've been with the Cavs for 8 years, and now you're the GM of the G League squad. How have you seen representation improve in the league?
Yeah, you know, I think there's been a concerted effort, I think, to not only find candidates, but also help people kind of grow in positions of leadership or development. I think, you know, you look at our organization with the Cavs, you know, we've got Kobe Altman and JB Bickerstaff as, you know, the president and head coach, and, you know, two minorities there. And I think the more different backgrounds and different views you can have, I think the more people realize that the better your organization is going to be.
Absolutely.
The more different, you know, opinions you can have, and you can figure out kind of the best way of doing things than just kind of everybody having kind of a groupthink or same mindset.
What are some of the pipelines to find some more diverse candidates? I mean, that's we've talked about this a lot across industry. So what are some of the pipelines that have to be mined from an NBA player development standpoint, but also getting on the coaching ranks? The sidelines is definitely different than in the front office.
Yeah, I think one program, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar, it's the NBA Stars program that I think is just starting or just kind of coming out, that the NBA, you know, the NBA has their assistant coaching program that they use, that they've done a really good job with, of, you know, placing some, you know, guys with NBA teams or G League teams and stuff, a lot of former players specifically. But the NBA Stars program is something I actually just learned about recently, that they're doing with all minorities, you know, females, Asians, African-Americans, just kind of any minority. And the NBA has a program where they basically kind of educate them a lot of front office things, whether it be scouting or salary cap or analytics, and kind of helps place them with NBA teams that kind of apply for this program, and kind of helps them get their foot in the door, get their start there. And so I know that that's, you know, one program that we've been involved with, and the NBA does, to kind of help that. And then, you know, from the coaching ranks, like, you see the success of a Becky Hammon or somebody like that. And, you know, we had Lindsey Gottlieb, who was awesome for us for the past few seasons. And just the more exposure that people have to, you know, a person like Lindsey or a person like Becky Hammon, the more normal it becomes, and the more, you know, just natural and organic. It's like, oh yeah, this person knows basketball. Like, yeah, like, this person's great for us, versus it being, you know, something where it's like forced upon anybody, if that makes sense.
we've had various conversations with folks around the idea of diversity, right? But within diversity, there are even more sects of which we need to be mindful of celebrating and making sure they have opportunities, right? And so when we look at sort of the league, I mean, there's yourself, Eric Spoelstra, Bobby Webster, representative GM with the Raptors, and then Rich Cho with the Grizzlies. There's people that have been successful, but maybe not consistent enough. And so it's funny you mentioned Lindsay, who I think is great. But there was like Lindsay, there was Neil Ivey that hopped in with the Grizzlies, Chrissy Tolliver with the Mavs now, but it's still just like a sprinkling, right? So like, how do you think the representation helps to create more opportunities, I guess would be my question.
Yeah, like I said, I think, you know, maybe folks on the coaching staff of all those staffs who were a little uneasy about the idea or unsure about the idea for whatever their kind of preconceived notions are,
right,
after working with, you know, great people like that, like I said, it kind of becomes more natural and more normal than if those guys become head coaches or if Lindsay becomes a head coach, it's like, you know, not different. It doesn't feel, like I said, forced or.
So,
yeah,
I'm sorry to cut you off, Brandon, but now I'm curious, like, do you feel like tokenism is a thing that folks need to be mindful of? Because I think it's easy for us to check boxes sometimes in the name of diversity, but are these people that we brought in truly empowered to be a part of an organization in an impactful way?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely something we all should be mindful of, in the sense that you're not just checking a box and you're giving whoever that person is a true opportunity, a true experience where, look, like it's unfortunately the reality of the world where there's always going to be reservations for people that are different coming in from the outside. And I think that's impossible to change all at once. But as long as the organization as a whole is, you know, really believes in this person, I think it can slowly change the minds of some of the people that, like I said, maybe weren't as open to those different ideas before. And so I think, like I said, it's definitely important to be mindful of the tokenism aspect of it. But I think if the organization as a whole believes in, and, you know, the key decision makers believe in that person, then it can kind of change the minds of some of the people that maybe weren't as sure. And it doesn't feel like a token anymore.
In some of that regard, I guess because you're seeing it across a bunch of different industries. And we talked about candidates, like, how do you find the right people? Like, we want to have diversity, but it's still got to be the best candidate. And that goes back to like checking boxes. I feel like you may actually, like, how do you make sure you find the right person for the role with an eye toward diversity?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I think that's something that we're all trying to improve at and figure out the best way to do that. I think it's important to, you know, do your homework and, you know, spend that extra time, you know, looking at resumes or, you know, making those extra calls to people that you've worked with in the past and might have candidates that could be different or, you know, could be diverse. And so, you know, for us, you know, I do a lot of work with like our front office internship here with the Cavs. And, you know, I get sent resumes kind of throughout the year of, you know, different candidates from all sorts of walks and backgrounds. But, you know, those 100 names, I might also reach out to the 10 to 15 college coaches that I know or something that might have a GA or know someone from the women's side of basketball that wants to get into it. And so just, I think really trying to make sure you get as big of a candidate pool and as diverse as a candidate pool as possible is important in that sense.
We've asked you a bunch of big picture questions. But what are you most proud of in the role that you've been able to hold with the Cavs so far?
Yeah, you know, for me, when people always ask kind of like, what's my favorite part of the job or, you know, ever since, you know, my days as a manager at IU, I think for me, it's being able to bring a sense of, you know, joy and togetherness in the community in a sense. And so obviously, you know, my favorite moment was 2016 when we won the NBA championship. And, you know, for me, I think it really hit me, you know, a week later or whatever it was, the parade in downtown Cleveland. That was the first championship in Cleveland history and 52 years or something crazy like that of any sport,
yep.
You know, Browns, Indian Guardians, and Cavs, and, you know, just seeing the hordes and hordes of people, you know, downtown people. I've got all sorts of pictures of people hanging out of parking garages or standing on top of exit ramps, and just like the joy that sports can bring, you know, a community and, you know, a city of people together, like that kind of just really resonates for me. And that's like my why of why, you know, I do this.
Take us into your story a little bit. How do you go from IU, where you're a manager, to getting to this position? Take us through it.
Yeah, so, you know, it actually dates back to my high school days where, you know, I played on the freshman team at a high school called Lawrence North High School in Indianapolis. And, you know, was really, really fortunate to have a lot of really good coaches there. And actually the coach that was there, Jack Kiefer, just recently retired after, I think, 46 years of coaching. He was there since the school opened and, you know, had developed a really, really good basketball program there. Greg Oden, Mike Conley both played there, and just kind of some high level hoops. Got to learn from those guys. And then after my freshman year, actually was cut off the team and became a student manager the next couple of years, knowing that I just love basketball, want to stay around the game, and kind of potentially thought I would want to do something with it in the future. Long story short, kind of was able to be actually the freshman team, like B team coach as a senior, kind of do some different circumstances, and kind of got my feet wet doing that. And that was an awesome experience getting to work with those guys. End up at IU as a student manager, knowing I want to do some more in basketball, and Coach Kiefer kind of helped make some calls there to help kind of get me in there. 4 years at IU as a student manager, Coach Crean, got to learn a ton, got to be super involved in a lot of different things, from video to analytics to on court to, you know, everything and anything in between, you know, manager duty wise, you know, towels, water, passing out pizzas after the game, everything and like that. And you know, was really fortunate there where got to be around a lot of really good players too, you know, Cody Zeller, Victor Oladipo, Yogi Ferrell, and, you know, with those NBA guys, type talents like that, we had a bunch of NBA, you know, front office, get some executives and scouts come through. And, you know, as a manager's job, you know, one of your jobs is to make sure that those guys are all set up for practices or games. And I would always just try and pick the brain of some of those guys that would come, you know, through and kind of figure out, learn more about their jobs and learn more about their backgrounds. And after I graduated, went down to Summer League, out down in Orlando at the time, and out to Vegas, and tried to kind of network and reconnect with some of the people there. You kind of figure out what teams might have what internships open, and then went through the process with a few different teams. And, you know, like I said, super fortunate again, just kind of right place, right time, was able to land an internship out with the Cavs and have been with them ever since.
Ah, the Summer League hustle. We all can relate to it for one reason or another. But you know, Brendan, I think back to college, and I don't know about you, Dallin, but my managers were like some of my favorite people. Not only because like how diligent they were about their jobs, but it was at points it could be very thankless work, right? Like, I guess what do you think of when you think back to the manager experience? I mean, you mentioned some heavy names. I mean, Vic in particular on his way to the Eastern Conference Finals. It sounds like you worked with a pretty good group of guys.
Yeah, no, it was an incredible experience for me, you know, working with high level players, working with high level coaches, and then, you know, there's, I think, 12 of us or so at the time that, like, some of those guys are my best friends, you know, going to multiple weddings and, you know, being groomsmen for those guys. And just, you know, people have, like, different fraternities or housemate roommates or whatever in college. Like, that was a fraternity in itself of manager. And, you know, I find memories of all those guys. And you make connections, you know, with them and then the other managers or other kind of GAs or video coordinators or other schools. And, you know, I still have, like I said, fond memories of we'd go on the road at Michigan State, and the night before our game there, we'd play manager pickup games.
Versus yeah, you guys ask, how was your squad? How was the team?
Now, that was honestly, like, humble bragging a little bit. Because I wasn't a great player, but my junior year, we went undefeated. We never lost. We got to the point where teams didn't even want to play us. They would rather just go out.
Okay.
Nice.
Is that a testament to Indiana high school basketball right there? Where a lot of your guys are Indiana dudes?
I think so. You know, it was fun. We played the Michigan State guys, and they had a few former college players and some pros kind of that played with them. Like, man, you guys are running the Bobby Knight motion offense, it feels like, out there. We had some really good shooters and just guys that kind of knew their role, and it was a lot of fun.
Take us through now. So, like, your role now, with the Cavs. Obviously, the Chicago, the combine's coming up. You know, that'll be in a couple days, next week here. We already went through summer league, got the draft coming up. Take us through what's going on right now. What are you focused on?
Yeah, my role right now is the GM of the Cleveland Charge. We recently moved our team up from Canton, Ohio, up to Cleveland, which has been an unreal experience to be able to have the team in the same city, to be able to practice the Cavs practice facility, have those resources, and be able to have our guys set up downtown Cleveland now, and just be able to increase the player experience side of things and improve that has been really, really good and helpful for us. But right now I'm focused a lot on the draft. I do a bunch of college scouting for the Cavs as well. So I'm on the road a lot during the year. And like I said, right now it's the combine. You do interviews, you're evaluating the combine play, you bring in a lot of guys for workout, draft workouts, help set up those. And you're really kind of in charge of helping put together the roster for that.
Just real quick to follow up on that. So in terms of, take us through how your duties, I guess, affect the Charge. And as you just said, how does that connect to the Cavs work? How do you kind of bridge both worlds, or do they not look at it as two different worlds? Like, take us inside a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's never really looked at. I know every kind of team and organization is different, but for us, it's not looked at as two separate worlds, especially kind of from a front office standpoint. You know, we hope that the guys we bring in for, the Charge are able to play for the Cavs as two ways or 10 days or just call it straight call ups and things like that. And so it's all been pretty connected there. But I would say this past year, we were really able to increase the connectivity amongst the coaching staff and even players moving the team up to Cleveland, because Canton's about, an hour or so south of Cleveland, kind of each way, which, during the season, coaches are busy, players are busy. It's, a 2-hour round trip plus a 2.5-hour game is a big ask to get those guys to, maybe come to a game or something like that. But, this year with the team up in Cleveland, us practicing at the practice facility, it was a lot easier to have everybody on the same page and a little bit more connected. And so, this year alone, we play our games at Cleveland State, which is kind of just a couple blocks from Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. I think this year alone, maybe the 6 or 7 nights where the Charge played at home and the Cavs are often at home, man, we had incredible support from the Cavs players and coaching staff. You come to a Charge game and you have Evan Mobley and Darius Garland and Colin Sexton sitting courtside. And it was just really cool. And I don't think you can quantify how much it means for, an RJ Nembhard, who's a two-way with us, or a Dylan Windler, who's down on assignment with us, to have the support of their teammates there or the coaching staff there as well. And so I think, like I said, it was never really looked at as two different kind of organizations. They're two separate things, but I think we're finding ways to make it even more so one.
Darius, when those guys were around for All-Star Weekend, they seemed like really cool dudes. So it doesn't surprise me that they would come and support the G League team. But I do, Brendan, while we got you, I think people sometimes don't fully grasp the grind that is the G League. I have such a different level of respect for G League players, coaches, officials, because it truly is just an opportunity to hopefully get to the next step of one's dream. But what would you say about sort of the G League experience that would encourage folks to come check it out and really understand that these guys are working just as hard as their big brothers in the league?
Yeah, no, I think the grind is, like you said, is hard. It's pretty wild to me to think that, the NBA is here and the G League is, one level below it. Obviously, you've got, EuroLeague, and not to take away from any of those leagues overseas at a really high level, but I think the G League is, the second or third best league in the world to the NBA. And to see the difference in terms of, travel accommodations or hotel accommodations between the two leagues, it's pretty startling in a sense. And, that's kind of the nature of the beast. But like you said, from a grind standpoint, a lot of times these guys, we all fly commercial. There's no kind of getting around that. You're trying to fit 7'6" Taco Fall on a little, puddle jumper from, Chicago to Oshkosh, Wisconsin or something like that. And then being asked to, play maybe that night or, the next day after being crammed on a plane and being asked, being asked to perform at a high level. That's tough. You know, I think people think that some, you know, glorious, you know, kind of travel lifestyle. Like, no, these guys are, you know, traveling on commercial flights, having to wait for their bags are getting lost, flights are delayed. And, you know, people like, you know, I think anybody, any person can relate to, you know, a long travel day, just how much that kind of takes out of you. Now these guys are having to perform physically and mentally at a high level. Like I said, that same night or next day is extremely tough, but, you know, for these guys, it's about, you know, opportunity and finding the right place and right team that, you know, values what their skill sets are. And the G League's about improving their game. And, you know, I think it's the numbers probably above 50% now, the number of guys in the NBA that have G League experience. You know, just last night, you see Max Strus go off for the Miami Heat. And I still remember Max Strus's first game was against us in Canton, Ohio, when he was with the Windy City Bulls at the time. And looked really good there and looked really good last night. And so, you know, anybody that wants to come out and see, you know, high level talent or kind of guys that are going to be in the NBA next year or two, like, the G League's a great place to do that at a really affordable rate too.
It's funny. We say it all the time. I say it all the time covering college basketball. Like, when you're playing at Duke and Kentucky, you're flying private, you're staying at the Ritz, you're staying at the Four Seasons. If you're not ready yet, you better stay there, because the G League ain't going to be easy, man. The G League is hard. Yeah. They got players, and it is a grind physically, mentally, and emotionally. As you get ready for the lottery and the combine and the draft here, not trying to put you on the spot too much, but we don't know who's drafting where yet. Who is the best player available in this draft in your mind?
Ooh,
man,
that's company trade secrets. You're trying to get me fired, Dalen.
Kobe won't hear. It's all right. Kobe has no clue what's going on.
But no, there's a lot of really good players in this draft, obviously. And, you know, we'll see how the lottery shakes out. We got lucky last year being able to move up and get Evan at pick 3. And so, you know, fingers crossed, something, you know, kind of magical can happen again this year.
Well, we won't ask you your actual pick, Brendan, but what, like, just in general, in terms of adding guys to an organization, like, what do you look for? Like, is it skill set? Is it mental? Is it physicality in terms of the readiness there? Because there's a whole lot of things that can make a guy fit or not.
Yeah, no, I think it's a little bit everything you mentioned and then some. You know, I think the more I've kind of learned and been able to see kind of the inner workings and how things work in the NBA, the more I've realized it's important that how important the situation is matches up with a player. And, you know, for us in Cleveland this year, I think we've kind of bucked the trend a little bit of small ball and kind of gone jumbo ball, you know, starting Lowry and Evan and Jarrett, 3 7-footers out there. And, you know, it's really worked for us. And JB's done an awesome job, and his staff done an awesome job of, you know, figuring out what works for us and figuring out the right pieces. And it's important. I think it's really, really important to have a shared vision, you know, with the coaching staff in terms of whatever player you're bringing in, whether it's a draft guy or a free agent, that person fits the culture, that person fits the play style, that person, you know, fits in with the rest of the team from a personality standpoint. Like, the right situation and right fit, I think, are really, really important for whoever you're bringing in from a player standpoint.
The last question I want to ask you is just in terms of, we talked about representation before, and as the GM of the G League team, the team there with the Cavs, kind of what is your professional goals? Like, what is the next step for you? Like, how do you navigate this? Where do you want to go next?
Yeah, for me, I've always been a big believer in just, you know, do the best job you can do in whatever your role it at, and people kind of take notice. I think, you know, we've got a couple sayings here, you know, within the organization that I really try and take to heart and try and live out. The first is, you know, be a fountain, not a drain. And
hold on, is that did Kobe? Did you learn that from Kobe?
Does he cite
Kyle Smith there? Because they were together. that's a Kyle line. Yeah. I don't make sure where Kyle got him. That's the first person I heard say it, but go ahead.
But
I love that. No.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, no, I think it's great that, you know, at the end of the day, we all have a great life. We get to watch basketball, be a part of basketball as for a living, which is not a real job in a sense. And so when you come into the office, you know, when you're dealing with people, like, you want to be with people that are fountains. You want to be with people that you enjoy working with, that, you know, bring energy, versus the drains that are the people that we've been around that maybe suck energy out of the room or aren't as fun to be around. And so I think, you know, that's a mindset thing, that I might not be having the best morning or the best day or whatever, but I know that, hey, I can be a fountain today, not a drain, when I walk through those doors to whoever they may be, the coaching staff, the security guard, the ops person, whoever the case may be, trying to be a fountain out of drain. And the other thing is, you got another saying that be a star in your role. And just, you know, I think that applies to players, but also applies to, you know, front office, coaching staff as well. Just whatever my role is within the organization that's going to help the organization the most, like I'm going to do the best job I can in that and just kind of let the chips kind of fall where they lie after that.
Be a fountain, not a drain. I've heard be a star in your role, but be a fountain, not a drain is new to me. You know me down right now.
Yep, she got the gems. Write them down.
That's a gem. All right, Brendan, you've been terrific. And I guess kind of to put a button on it all, and I think you touched on this in some of your answers. But again, just to kind of put a ribbon, tie it all together. What do you think allyship looks like from the NBA community as we continue this push toward sincere diversity?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different, you know, avenues to show that or demonstrate that. I think the platform that the NBA has, you know, in the public side is really important to keep the conversation going and not let this, you know, die off, you know, or kind of trickle off, I guess, as you might say, as time passes on without seeing, you know, meaningful improvements. And I think it's important to continue to, like I said, keep the conversation going in that sense, and then also do our part, you know, within our organization ranks, like you said, whether it's coaching staffs or front offices or, you know, things like that, or players or whatever the case may be, to do our part and not just talk the talk, but walk the walk, if that makes sense.
Makes total sense. Thanks a lot, Brian. We really appreciate it, man. Good luck as you move into the draft season here, and good luck in the lottery, obviously, maybe most importantly. Thank you, my man.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Brendan.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coach's Corner. For more, go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.